Good morning, everyone. Happy Sunday morning. Let's see what is today, July 12th. So we're almost halfway through the month of July. I'm just kind of scanning and looking at all who all is in the room. So hello, everyone. It's good to see you, and I'm sure there will be some others joining us, but oh my goodness, lots of wonderful friends in the room already. Yeah, it's really good to see you guys. Beautiful day. What I am going to do, I've scanned you now, and in my heart, I said hello to each of you, but I think we have a formal part of our program, which is really wonderful, and that is taking a few moments just to greet each other on our board, our interactive board here. We're so lucky to have that. And so what I'm going to do is play the song that I traditionally play during this part of our weekly gathering by Deborah Pramell and Mitten. It is called Awakening. Everyone, please enjoy greeting one another.
Melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in
about 7 minutes and 8 seconds, and so I never get the opportunity to play the entire song, but you know, the beginning is a very beautiful reminder of why we are here, awakening together. It's a gorgeous song. I would like to share today one of our core values as today's statement of purpose, and I've decided to share core value number 3. It seems very related to today's reading and today's teaching. Our third core value is this. We accept one true self, which is one presence or being, non-dual, without beginning or end, and absolutely changeless. We live this value by practicing letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. And one thing that I personally find interesting about the third core value, and for those of you who don't know, there wasn't a lot of thought that went into these core values. In fact, there wasn't any thought at all. I was literally standing in my kitchen when they started to come, and the first time they were ever written down, they were written down on a napkin. So they just came boom, 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 real fast. So there was no thought that went into them. There have been a couple of minor word changes that were made as a result of discussion with members of the board of directors and the board of trustees. But other than a couple of minor word changes, these are exactly as they were originally written down on that napkin. And one thing that's always interested me about the third core value is, you know, it's using words to, I'm holding up air quotes now, to define, air quote the word define. It's using words to define what cannot be defined. And one reason that I suppose this needed to be done is because the core values state as best as they can in words, the core values state the shared purpose of this assembly called Awakening Together. And, you know, there are many different ideas of what a God is or ideas of what a truth is. And we needed to, in some way, state what we share as that idea. Even though truth is not an idea, God is not an idea, that still needed to be somehow stated, you know, so that we could, as best as we could, express our shared purpose. And this shared purpose, of course, refers to a non-dual presence, or some people might call it a being. It has no beginning, no end, and absolutely changeless. And I suppose that's as good of a definition as can be given. But once I look at that, what I really feel my job is to focus on the second half of that core value. And the second half of that core value is this. We live this value by practicing letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. It doesn't seem to me that it does any good at all to have a belief in a true self, even a, you know, well-defined, as well as words can do, a well-defined true self, if I don't back up that faith, trust, belief with genuine practice as a core part of my current existence. And if there is only one true self, and if that one true self is a presence that is non-dual, has no beginning, no end, and is absolutely changeless, then what that most certainly means is that the true self cannot be this personality body. Because this personality body has a beginning, has an end, and changes all the time, right? So if I want to realize this truth that is pointed to by these words, then I must have a genuine ongoing practice of letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. And that to me is one of the core things that we are about here at Awakening Together. All right, so from there I'm going to move to our announcements today. I have three announcements. The first announcement that I want to make is that we have a new class starting in the first week of August. We actually have two different days of the week to choose from. The class is Introduction to NTI, which of course I think you all know is the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament. Although Awakening Together does not have one scripture, you know, that everyone studies, because again, Awakening Together is really about having everyone follow their own guidance. NTI is actually the scripture that you could say is owned by us. NTI is owned and maintained by us. And we have a class that goes over four of the books in NTI, the book of Luke, Acts, Galatians, and Revelation. It's a six-week class. And again, it's going to begin in the first week of August. One opportunity to take it would be on Tuesday evenings, if that suits your schedule. That's from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That class starts on August 4th. It's a six-week class. It will be facilitated by Jacqueline Eckert. And homework always begins a week early so that when you come to class, you know, again, our classes aren't designed for anyone to learn from a teacher outside of them. Our classes are designed to learn from within yourself, to really continually increase that connection to inner wisdom. So all of our classes have a week of homework even before the first class where you are going within with the material and contemplating the material. So the homework always begins the week before class. So since the class begins on August 4th, that means the homework begins on July 29th. Or the second option is we also have a Wednesday morning class, also facilitated by Jacqueline. That class just begins on August 5th, the very next day. And the homework begins on July 29th, the week before. Again, the class is 6 weeks, so if you go on Tuesday evenings, the class concludes on September 8th. If you go on Wednesday mornings, the class concludes on September 9th. I don't think I mentioned the time of the Wednesday morning class. That's 10 a.m. to noon Eastern time. So we have a Tuesday evening and a Wednesday morning. The fee is $120. And the textbook that you could use is either NTI or the Keys to NTI. You have two choices. Either one will work. And you can find out more information about this by going to awakening-together.org and clicking on the classes menu. You'll see all the information right there. My second announcement today is that I want to introduce you all to something that's on the reginadonacres.com website. It's under the fun menu. When you go to reginadonacres.com and you look at the menu bar, you'll notice there's a menu called fun. And underneath that, there's something called Pueblo Scrapbook, which I am very slowly adding things to. It's not anything that I, you know, work at every day. You know, maybe every couple months or every 3 months I add something to that scrapbook. But the reason I have a Pueblo Scrapbook is because, as you all know, we have a fundraiser going on to raise funds for a retreat center in Pueblo, Colorado. And so I thought people might really enjoy seeing Pueblo, Colorado. And, of course, I live here, and so I have the opportunity to share with you. For example, yesterday I went and hiked the Spanish Peaks. The Spanish Peaks are south of Pueblo by about 70 miles, I think, maybe a little less. It didn't take long to drive down there at all. In fact, when we got up in the morning yesterday, we had no plan. We were just kind of moseying around. and then my boyfriend said, you know, what should we do today? And I said, I don't know. I don't have any ideas. And then I looked up and I saw the Spanish Peaks. And I said, let's go hike the peaks. We've never done that before. And we went ahead and, you know, showered, had breakfast, you know, just moseying about. And it was no earlier than 8:30 when we left the house. And we still were up on top by 1 o'clock when we ate lunch. So to drive down there and to hike up, I mean, it was such an easy thing to do. And the hike was incredibly easy, by the way. Very easy hike and absolutely beautiful. Now, the Spanish Peaks are, they were considered holy or spiritual by the Native Americans who lived in this area before the Spaniards settled the area. And they're really amazing. Not only are they incredibly beautiful, there are two peaks that stand side by side. As Lena's pointing out, that the Native American name for these two peaks was actually Breasts of the Earth. And in fact, they are surrounded by very, very fertile ground. Lots of farms around the peaks. But also what's around the peaks that's incredibly interesting are these large rock walls that radiate out from the peaks in all directions, just like the rays radiate out from the sun. And I was reading up on this yesterday, and what I read online is there is no place else on Earth with this formation. There's supposed to be over 400 of these rock walls that radiate out from these two mountains. There's no place else on Earth that this formation exists, and geologists all over the world are aware of this area. It's just very, very famous to geologists. So, you know, it's a very, very interesting area to explore. Again, you have these two huge, beautiful mountains. The tallest one goes up over 13,000 feet with these rock walls shooting out from them, like rays shooting out from the sun. Just gorgeous. And so that's where we went yesterday. I took some pictures, and I posted them in that Pueblo scrapbook on ReginaDonAcres.com. You'll also see pictures there that I took a month or so ago when I was walking along the Arkansas River here in Pueblo. And as I, you know, do things from time to time, I will take pictures and post them. So if you're interested in knowing what this area has to offer, please watch that Pueblo scrapbook. I have to be honest with you all in that I don't know why the retreat center is in Pueblo. The only thing that I can tell you about that is that once upon a time I lived in North Carolina and I had a dream that told me to come to Pueblo. I didn't even know where Pueblo was. I had to look it up on a map. So something beyond me brought me here. And then last September, while alone in a St. Clair's church in Santa Barbara in a very deep, deep state of surrender, the guidance came to start the retreat center. And it came to start it here in Pueblo. So there's some kind of a plan that I am not aware of, so I can't tell you the why Pueblo instead of someplace else for the retreat center, but I can share with you some of the things that are here. So again, that's what the Pueblo scrapbook is all about if you want to watch it. The next thing I want to share is, of course, you all know we have a fall retreat coming up. And let's see, this is mid-July, and our fall retreat starts at the end of October, so July, August, September. So that's a little over 3.5 months away. So we're really getting into the time now where registration is starting to activate. People are starting to register a little more. We have, as you know, 3 retreats. And you can come for 1, 2, or all 3, and there is a discount if you come for all 3. The first retreat is Jan Frazier, and I think as I was coming on today, I heard Lynn say something about, I think it was Barb recently went to a Jan Frazier retreat, and she's going to be sharing from that today. I'd love it, Lynn, if you were able to record that and maybe even, you know, send me the link to the recording or let me know when the recording's uploaded onto Dropbox or whatever. I would love to listen. I won't be around today to hear, but I would love to hear it. So Barb will be sharing what she got out of a Jan Frazier retreat in her area. Oh, she's at the retreat today. Okay, good, good, good. So after she gets back from the retreat, we'll hear what she's getting out of it. That's in her area. Jan Frazier will be here. Okay, so not till next week. We have the recording. Got it. So Jan Frazier will be here in Colorado Springs, Colorado, from Friday, October 30th, until Sunday, November 1 for a retreat. And then I follow her. I will do a retreat beginning Sunday evening, November 1 through lunchtime on Friday, November 6th. November 1 to November 6th. And then Ventino Massaro follows me. His retreat begins on Friday evening, November 6th until Sunday, November 8th. And I do think all 3 of the retreats are really going to be valuable. I'm probably most curious about Bentinho's because Bentinho is going through a shift right now. Some of you may be aware of this. The last couple of years, he's been really teaching what I call enjoyment, which is about, you know, just, I don't know if it's as much specifically envisioning what you want to happen in the world as much as living at your absolute highest vibration so that your experience in the world just unfolds in this incredible way. And even though before when I asked him if he was teaching the law of attraction, he said no. Recently he is saying maybe that was kind of the law of attraction. and he's losing interest in it. He's no longer interested in that. What he is interested in now is disappearing into the absolute. And he says he's told his people that he won't be doing any more retreats after his retreat in, I think it's October, and I think it's somewhere in California. But he has told me that he will do our retreat that he already committed to in November. He's just gotten much more interesting. He's gotten very, very interesting now that his focus has shifted, his inner calling has shifted. And in fact, I think I even saw it coming because if you were watching him on Monday evenings, there was something in him that seemed to be getting tired of his own teaching. And if you've ever listened to Bentino, whenever he shifts, what happens is he gets tired of where he's at just prior to the shift. In fact, you could go back and listen to the Awakening Together satsang I did with him last summer. It's on awakening-together.org underneath our featured talks. That's under the inspiration menu, inspiration, then featured talks. And you can scroll down and find the Bentinho satsang we did, and you'll hear him say, you know, well, then I started to get tired of that. And then he shifts. This is how it happens for him. He starts to get tired of where he's at, and then he shifts. And what's happened is he's getting tired of where he's been for the last 2 years. And so another shift is happening. So that should make for a very, very interesting retreat. So again, we have three retreats coming up. It's the one with Jan Fraser, Regina Dawn Akers, and then Bentinho Massaro. So any of those that you feel called to, you can register for by going to awakening-together.org and clicking on the events menu, and you'll find the information for the fall retreat there. I see the question. Lots of personalities with lots going on, it seems. Is this all one? The oneness lies in the awareness. That's where we're all one. You take any personality at all, and compare it to another personality, and you're going to find some differences. And the more people believe the mind, the thoughts that come into the mind, the more differences you'll find. But if you're willing to strip away the mind, strip away the personality, strip away the physical difference, what you're going to find is a sameness that is absolute pure oneness. It's often referred to as awareness. And that's what letting go of the belief in the personality, letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are is all about. And that's what all three of these teachers in their own ways are going to be pointing to at the fall retreat. Nobody's going to be there teaching anything different. So that ends the announcements portion, which means we're ready to get into the more sacred portion of our weekly gathering. And I'm going to start by playing a song today that is very, very sacred to me. Again, it fits very much with this core value that we accept one true self, which is one presence or being, non-dual, without beginning or end, and absolutely changeless. And then we live this value by practicing letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. To me, this song is the essence of that statement. It's by a songwriter named Stephen Walters. And the name of the song is Nothing Less Than Everything. Have a listen. I think if you listen with your eyes closed especially, you might find the heart really sings along with the song.
I was walking down a lonely road, looking for a place to rest. There was no escaping from this ache inside my chest. Then I got down on my knees and begged for mercy, and I raised up my hands. And I knew the answer, even as I asked the question, just how much this love demands. And it's everything, everything. Nothing less than everything will do. And when everything is burned, I will take these ashes and offer them up to you. Shiva, Shiva, Mahadeva, Mahadeva. Shiva, Shiva, Mahadeva, Mahadeva. I was walking down a lonely road, looking for a place to rest. no escaping from this ache inside my chest. Then I got on my knees and begged for mercy. And I raised up my hands. And I knew the answer, even as I asked the question, just how much this love demands. And it's everything. Nothing less than everything will do. And when everything is burnt, I will take these ashes and offer them up to you. Shiva, Shiva, Mahadeva, Mahadeva. Shiva, Shiva. Mahadeva, Mahadeva, everything, nothing less than everything will do.
So now we'll go into a bit of silence, and I will break the silence with a prayer. The song that we just listened to spoke of giving up everything for the love that is truth. I think sometimes when people hear teachings about letting go of everything, they look around at their furniture, they look at their bank accounts, maybe they look at their families. But I think what really needs to be looked at is our definition of ourself, who we think we are, our thoughts, our emotions, our body. It seems to me if we just focus inward in our letting go of everything, the outer will take care of itself. We're told the outer is a reflection of the inner. So there doesn't need to be any ego-based ideas about what needs to be given up on the outside. What needs to happen is the letting go more from the inside. The inside, which is still the outside from truth. But again, thoughts, ideas about who we are, emotions that we're addicted to. As we focus on letting go of this inner curtain from the veil of illusion, the outer naturally shifts and changes. Also, we find a natural acceptance of some things as they are without any change needed. And sometimes there is a very sincere inner guidance that does not come from our ego that tells us to make a change and we know to follow it, such as my move to Pueblo. But it's not up to us to let go or change the outer. It's up to us to be focused inward, letting go of everything that we think we are inwardly. That's where the thickest veil of illusion is. In India, of course, there's a strong belief that the family should be left, the work should be left, and one should move to an ashram in order to awaken. And with these types of questions, devotees used to approach Ramana Maharshi and ask, and Ramana would always say, it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter if you're a householder with a family and a job, or whether you're alone in the woods or in a cave. The mind is with you, and the mind is what needs to be let go. So help each of us to be very honest, very sincere in looking at that inner veil of illusion and letting it go, trusting that as we do this, everything else will unfold naturally, taking care of itself. Amen. So now I would like to turn the mic over to Karen Worth, who is going to be sharing today from the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. Karen, the mic is yours. Because of Pal Talk issues this morning, Karen's reading did not come through clearly, although her devotion did. But for the recording, I am going to reread today's reading. So this comes from the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, starting on page 4. Question number 8, it's a questioner asking questions and then Ramana Maharshi answering those questions. What is the nature of mind? Answer. What is called mind is a wondrous power residing in the self. It causes all thoughts to arise. Apart from thoughts, there is no such thing as mind. Therefore, thought is the nature of mind. Apart from thoughts, there is no independent entity called the world. In deep sleep, there are no thoughts, and there is no world. In the states of waking and dream, there are thoughts, and there is a world also. Just as the spider emits the thread of the web out of itself and again withdraws it into itself, likewise the mind projects the world out of itself and again resolves it into itself. When the mind comes out of the self, the world appears. Therefore, when the world appears to be real, the self does not appear. And when the self appears, the world does not appear. When one persistently inquires into the nature of the mind will end, leaving the self as residue. What is referred to as the self is the Atman. The mind always exists. Only in dependence on something gross. It cannot stay alone. It is the mind that is called the subtle body or the soul. Question. What is the path of inquiry for understanding the nature of the mind? Answer. That which rises as I in this body is the mind. If one inquires as to where in the body the thought I rises first, one would discover that it rises in the heart. That is the place of the mind's origin. Even if one thinks constantly, I, one will be led to that place. Of all the thoughts that arise in the mind, the I thought is the first. It is only after the rise of this that other thoughts arise. It is after the appearance of the first personal pronoun that the second and third personal pronouns appear. Without the first personal pronoun, there will not be the second and third. How will the mind become quiet? Answer. By the inquiry, who am I? The thought, who am I, will destroy all other thoughts, and like the stick used for stirring the burning pyre, it will itself in the end get destroyed. then there will arise self-realization. What is the means for constantly holding on to the thought, "Who am I?" Answer. When other thoughts arise, one should not pursue them, but should inquire, "To whom did they arise?" It does not matter how many thoughts arise. As each thought arises, one should inquire with diligence, "To whom has this thought arisen?" The answer that would emerge would be, "To me." Thereupon, if one inquires, "Who am I?" the mind will go back to its source, and the thought that arose will become quiet. With repeated practice in this manner, the mind will develop the skill to stay in its source. When the mind that is subtle goes out through the brain and the sense organs, the gross names and forms appear. When it stays in the heart, the names and forms disappear. Not letting the mind go out, but retaining it in the heart, is what is called inwardness. Letting the mind go out of the heart is known as externalization. Thus, when the mind stays in the heart, the I, which is the source of all thoughts, will go, and the self, which ever exists, will shine. Whatever one does, one should do without the egoity I. If one acts in that way, all will appear as the nature of Shiva, or God. Are there no other means for making the mind quiet? Answer. Other than inquiry, there are no adequate means. If through other means it is sought to control the mind will appear to be controlled, but will again go forth. Through the control of breath also, the mind will become quiet, but it will be quiet only so long as the breath remains controlled. And when the breath resumes, the mind will also again start moving and will wander as impelled by residual impressions. I'm going to skip down to the bottom of the page. Like the practice of breath control, meditation on the forms of God, repetition of mantras, restriction on food, etc., are but aids for rendering the mind quiet. Through meditation on the forms of God and through repetition of mantras, the mind becomes one-pointed. The mind will always be wandering. Just as when the chain is given to an elephant to hold in its trunk, it will go along grasping the chain and nothing else. So also when the mind is occupied with a name or form, it will grasp that alone. When the mind expands in the form of countless thoughts, each thought becomes weak. But as thoughts get resolved, the mind becomes one-pointed and strong. For such a mind, self-inquiry will become easy. Of all the restrictive rules, the relating to the taking of sattvic food in moderate quantities is best. By observing this rule, the sattvic quality of mind will increase, and that will be helpful to self-inquiry. Just a note from Regina. So Rama is saying what you eat can affect your concentration, so be mindful of that. Question. The residual impressions, thoughts, appear unending like the waves of an ocean. When will all of them be removed? Answer. As the meditation on the self rises higher and higher, the thoughts will get destroyed. Question. Is it possible for the residual impressions of objects, thoughts that come from beginningless time, as it were, to be resolved, and for one to remain as the pure self? In other words, is it possible for the mind to become quiet? Answer. Without yielding to the doubt, is it possible or not, one should persistently hold on to the meditation on the self. Even if one be a great sinner, one should not worry and weep, "Oh, I am a sinner, how can I be saved?" One should completely renounce the thought, "I am a sinner," and concentrate keenly on meditation on the self. Then one would surely succeed. There are not two minds, one good and the other evil. The mind is only one. It is the residual impressions that are of two kinds, auspicious and inauspicious. When the mind is under the influence of auspicious impressions, it is called good. And when it is under the influence of inauspicious impressions, it is regarded as evil. The mind should not be allowed to wander toward worldly objects and what concerns other people. However bad other people may be, one should bear no hatred for them. Both desire and hatred should be eschewed. All that one gives to others, one gives to oneself. If this truth is understood, who will not give to others? When one's self arises, all arises. And when one's self becomes quiet, all becomes quiet. To the extent we behave with humility, to that extent there will result good. If the mind is rendered quiet, one may live anywhere. Question: how long should inquiry be practiced? Answer: as long as there are impressions of objects in the mind, so long the inquiry, "Who am I?" is required. As thoughts arise, they should be destroyed then and there in the very place of their origin, through inquiry. If one resorted to contemplation of the self unintermittently until the self was gained, that alone would do. As long as there are enemies within the fortress, they will continue to sally forth. If they are destroyed as they emerge, the fortress will fall into our hands. The gist of the idea, this is coming from a portion of Ramana Maharshi's teaching, which is called Nan Yar, which means, "Who am I?" And I'm sure you all are familiar with Ramana Maharshi's self-inquiry, "Who am I?" And the question really started off, what is the nature of the mind? I mentioned in the prayer that Ramana Maharshi used to tell people, whether you are at home with family and job, or whether you go off into the woods or a cave, the mind goes with you. Right? It's not the outer change that makes the difference. It's the mind that needs to be let go, wherever you are. And so what is happening in this particular reading that Karen shared is that a questioner has asked, what is the nature of the mind? And Ramana Maharshi says, apart from thoughts, there is no such thing as mind, which maybe many of us have heard before. That is not new. And he also says, of course, that as we entertain our thoughts, the world appears. So the world comes from our thoughts. Also not new. But this explains again why instead of trying to change the world, we need to change our thoughts about the world, as the Course says. But I would say even more than that, it's not about changing our thoughts about the world. That almost makes it sound like positive thinking. If you take that sentence out of context, of course, if you study the entire Course, you know differently. But that line alone makes it sound like, oh, think only positive thoughts. It's really about letting go of that thinking completely. That entire thought system that we think of as I or me or my thoughts. We often call it the ego, and some people may even misunderstand the ego to be only the negative, only the attacking thoughts, only the fear thoughts, only the guilt thoughts. But any thought that comes from the idea of I or me, separate and apart from anything else, that is the ego. That is the ego. So every idea that springs out of the I-me thought is a thought that needs to be let go. And when all of these thoughts are let go, then, according to Ramana Maharshi, the world itself disappears and all that is known is the self, the true self. One of the things that he says in this reading is that if we watch where this I thought arises, the idea of me, the idea of a self that is separate from everyone and everything else, if we look very, very carefully to see where it arises, he says it rises out of the heart. And that's a very interesting statement. It rises out of the heart. And at least for me, this took a lot of contemplation, I think, because I associated the heart with truth and I associated the I thought with untruth. And those associations are not completely wrong. In fact, they're probably not wrong at all. But As I contemplated this deeply, there was a shift that occurred that allowed me to have complete understanding of this teaching. The heart can be thought of as pure silence. You know, God, truth, is a pure yet intelligent and living silence, but you cannot take the pure silence out of it. Sometimes when we think of the word intelligent, silence goes away because we think of intelligence as thinking, but that's not what intelligence really is. So truth or God is that pure, living, silent intelligence. But pure silence, and that's the part I want to focus on right now, the pure silence of it. And so the I thought, and therefore the entire ego thought system, arises out of the silence. And you know what? This is not really rocket science. In a way, it's profound when you realize it, but it isn't difficult. In fact, anyone can realize it at any time. And this is what Ramana Maharshi is saying. He's saying, if you watch, if you get still, you know, stop moving about and doing whatever you do in the world, set still somewhere, set still and watch. And when those thoughts start to come, look and say, where did that come from? This is one way inquiry can work. Where did that come from? Look, see if you can find where it came from. He calls that the heart. He says it arises from the heart. It comes from, you could say, nothing, but you could say pure silence. At the beginning of every thought, before the thought is thought, there is pure silence. The issue is that most of us are so caught up in a spinning web of thoughts, we never notice the pure silence. We never focus on the pure silence. Our attention never goes to the pure silence. Our attention is always, always going to the thought. That's like focusing our attention on the curtain that is the veil without focusing our attention on the space that is surrounding the curtain, and yet it's still there. The space is there. So what we do during the practice of self-inquiry is we train ourselves to focus on the silence. So if I'm in a self-inquiry meditation, I'm going to have to kind of make this up. This is a dramatization, as they say. But if I'm in a self-inquiry meditation, I'm sitting with my eyes closed, and if you're anything like me, when you close your eyes with the intention to see thoughts with awareness, the thoughts at first hide. They kind of remind me of, like, if you've ever lived in a place like Florida where, you know, roaches are fairly common no matter how clean you keep the house just because of the humidity and stuff. If there's any roaches at all in your house, when you turn the light on, they scatter, right? They scatter. Well, that's kind of what it's like for me when I sit down to practice self-inquiry meditation, is when I sit down with that intention to look with awareness, they scatter. There are no thoughts. But you only have to be patient a little bit if you're anything like me and the thoughts begin to appear. But when the thoughts begin to appear, that's when the asking needs to happen, the looking. Where is this thought coming from? What was at the beginning of the thought? What is the source of the thought? And if you look, you'll find that silence again. And in fact, because you have just re-emphasized the looking with awareness, the roaches scatter again and there's again silence, and you can contemplate the silence. You can notice, you can begin to notice the silence as the foundational, fundamental truth. You can also begin to notice the silence as what you are, rather than the thinking, which is what you thought you were. Ramana also recommends, if that question doesn't work for someone, where do these thoughts arise from, that you could also ask, to whom do these thoughts arise? And focus on yourself as the observer, as the watcher of the thoughts. Focus your attention on that, the silent watcher, the silent observer. Either way, you're turning your attention to the silence. You're focusing on the profound silence that is the truth of what we are. It's not a thought about silence. In fact, there's no thinking in it. As soon as the thinking starts, the self-inquiry needs to begin again. And Ramana says that if we practice this regularly, at some point the mind will go quiet. And to me, that's purely logical. If you think of the teaching that whatever we give our attention to kind of expands. So if I give my attention to thinking, thinking expands. But if I consciously give my attention to silence, it's not really that the silence expands. You can't say that silence expands any more than you can say the space in the room expands. But what happens is the thinking is no longer being supported with that attention. And so the thinking begins to die out. And in that way, it seems that the silence is expanding. Someone asked the question. It's really interesting because this is a very, very good question. Someone asked the question, is it possible for these residual impressions or the thoughts, which again are coming and coming and coming. He says, in fact, they appear like unending waves of the ocean. Is it possible for these thoughts, which appear like unending waves of an ocean, for all of them to be removed? For the mind to go completely quiet? Is that at all possible? And Ramana Maharshi answers, without yielding to the doubt, is it possible or not? One should persistently hold on to the meditation of the self. So think about that. If we are even sitting there thinking, wow, I don't know if these thoughts will ever go away, there's a thought we should inquire into. From where did that thought arise? Or to whom did that thought arise? In one of the course workbook lessons, I don't recall which one as I said here, but there's something about spending 5 minutes with that workbook lesson saves 1,000 years, something like that. Do you all remember something similar? Well, imagine if we spend an hour a day involved in this very conscious self-inquiry. Where with every thought that arises, we ask whatever question is helpful to focus us on the silence that is the self. You know, again, the question could be, where did this thought arise from? That looking will be helpful for some people. To whom did this thought arise? That looking will be helpful to some people. One question that I sometimes ask is, what here is changeless even as these thoughts come and go? And that does the same focusing. And maybe there's another question that will arise to you spontaneously that does the same question that you find is helpful. But what Ramana is saying in this teaching is that this kind of inquiry is necessary. You know, there are other practices that people practice that Ramana talks about here, like focusing on the breath. You know, as you're really focused on the breath, you're not focused on the mind, and so the mind grows quiet. Or saying a mantra repeatedly or a particular sound repeatedly. Ramana says all of those measures, however, are temporary. And the real reason that they're temporary is that they're control. It's kind of like you've put your thumb on the thoughts through this practice and you're holding the thoughts back. It's like having your finger in a dike. But when you take your finger out of the dike, when you remove your thumb from the thoughts, they begin to spin again. He's saying this can still be helpful because it can give you the discipline that is necessary to practice self-inquiry. You can become very, very focused. You can learn to be very, very focused and one-pointed. Therefore, because you became very focused and one-pointed through watching the breath, through saying a mantra, through focusing on a sound, focusing on the third eye, whatever. Now that you have learned that discipline, you can now take that discipline and you can apply that discipline to inquiry. But only inquiry which takes your attention and focuses it on the self and allows you to set in contemplation of the self is going to result in the ending of the mind, the permanent quieting of thoughts. And again, if you think about this, it makes sense. Because as long as we're giving our attention to thoughts are going to come. The attention feeds them. If we learn to be very focused in taking our attention away from the thoughts and focusing on the silence, the thoughts are not being fed and they will come to an end. They will die. So again, I ask, imagine if you are willing to spend an hour a day very focused on this, the rewards that might come. Let's see if there's anything else I want to share. Well, of course, you know, there's just some very simple thoughts here which are really interesting. Like he says, for example, even if one perceives himself to be a great sinner, one should not worry and weep, oh, I am a sinner, how can I be saved? Instead, practice inquiry. Where did that thought come from? To whom does that thought appear? Right? He says the mind should not be allowed to wander toward worldly objects and what concerns other people. And then he also says, to the extent we behave with humility, to that extent will there be good? But that's not the sign I wanted to read. It was actually the next sentence. If the mind is rendered quiet, one may live anywhere. So again, that goes back to we do not need to change the outer world. Even in this letting go of everything, it's not up to us to, with our ego, decide, oh, I need to let go of my furniture and my family and my money and I need to let go of all of these things. In fact, I've known many spiritual people that have done those things and then ended up coming right back to those things at some point. You know, buying more furniture, getting a new relationship. Because the mind was still there. Instead, we render the mind quiet through the practice of self-inquiry. And then we can live anywhere. Another final question I'd like to share with you. One person says, how long should inquiry be practiced? And he says, as long as there are impressions of objects in the mind, which means as long as there are any thoughts at all. He says, as thoughts arise, they should be destroyed then and there in the very place of their origin. And although he uses the word destroy, what he really means is focusing back onto the quiet, the silence, rather than following the thought and giving it attention. It will naturally die if we do not give it attention. He uses an example. As long as there are enemies within the fortress, they will continue to sally forth. If they are destroyed as they emerge, the fortress will fall into our hands. So he's using the example of war, that we do not give up as long as there is a single soldier out there that could attack. Until the mind is completely quiet. And again, many people will say that's impossible. He would say, inquire into that thought. From where did that thought come? To whom did that thought appear? I'm now going to play a song by Kirtana. It's called Ramana's Song. And as I play this song, I ask everyone just to contemplate this lesson and maybe even contemplate our desire and our willingness to spend time each day in very focused inquiry practice where we're not distracted by anything else. We're not doing anything else but inquiry. contemplate your willingness to do that. Also, I believe this is the time when Lynn today will share a link where if one chooses to donate to Awakening Together, you can do so. Here is Kirtana's song, Ramana's song.
Why do you seek the path that leads away? Deeper into the woods, when home is your aim, why do you pitch your tent on foreign land? Turn toward the self, go back the way you came. Enter with love the temple of your heart. Heart is the holy sanctum I reside. Offer to me the ruby of your mind. That is the sweetest offering, wine that has died.
Know that I
So this is the portion of the time when we allow people to share. We don't have as much time today as we normally do, but we do have time. If there is somebody who would like to share based on today's teaching or today's reading, please put up your hands. I'd absolutely love to hear what you have to say. All right, Lynn, the mic is yours.
All right, thank you, Regina. Yes, you know, it really is basically the only thing we have to do. It's the only thing that needs to be done. It's the only thing that has any meaning is to know who I am. It's the only reason that I do what I do when anything happens. All things are lessons God would have me learn. That's the lesson today in the Course in Miracles workbook. All things are lessons God would have me learn is all about forgiveness and forgiving what I thought I was and remembering what I am. And so I love this. Thank you so much, Regina, for this topic. And please feel free to take longer. You know the next hour is mine, and it is for this very purpose, so we can communicate amongst each other about what we are receiving from this. So thank you so much, Regina, and I'm going to let go of the mic for Karen. And I see Sonia has her hand up as well.
Hey, I wanted to, hopefully you can all hear me better. Just wanted to thank you, Regina, for that teaching. And since I started reading this book in the last 2 weeks preparing for our class to start, I've started a practice that's really been helpful. And what I do is well, in the book, I learned a little bit about Ramana Maharshi. I don't really know much about him, but I've learned a great deal since starting reading the book. And he says that he's always with us, and so I trust him on that. And so when I go into meditation, I ask him to help me to know myself better. And I sit in the cave. As he was a young man, he sat in a cave for, I don't know how many years. I'm going to guess like 30-something years. But as a young man, I put myself in his skin, in his cave, and I take on what he was at the time. I'm just a person in a cave. I don't have any past. I don't have any future except knowing myself. I have a loincloth. I don't have any other possessions. I don't have need of any possessions. And as I sit with him in that state, as thoughts come up, it's easier for me to look at them and see that they don't really have any meaning, that they are meaningless. And so it's kind of like what the Course says, you know, come to the altar, lay everything down, come open-handed, forget everything you know, even about the Course. And so when I put myself in Ramana Maharshi and I ask him to support me in it, I've been able to lay everything down, and the thoughts, when they come up, it's easier to see and just let them go because I know how meaningless they truly are. Thanks.
Hi, can you hear me? I don't see anybody saying yes. Oh, good. Alrighty, good morning. And Karen, thank you. That was beautiful. The Ramana teachings are absolutely freeing. And I just wanted to give my gratitude. We, in our Course in Miracles class that we have every morning at 7:00 this morning, we talked about all of these things. We talked about the silence. We talked about all these things, and it's just amazing to me, Regina, that you planned this reading a week ago, and that we're all one. I guess it shouldn't be a surprise anymore. It should not be a surprise that we really are all one, and we are all studying the same truth. So I just wanted to give my gratitude and to say thank you, and the folks on the Course in Miracles conference call don't always listen here, so they're not aware of the teachings that come up. So really, let's just keep shining. Love you.
Thank you very much, Sonia. We all love these divine coincidences. And Karen, I wanted to say to you that often when I sit down for my meditation and the thought arises that it's going to be difficult today, which that thought does arise, it's a resistance mechanism, you know. I do exactly what you spoke of. I turn to Ramana. And I even sometimes just feel his presence holding me as I practice meditation, and it's a very strong presence, and it's very nice. It helps. So I just want to thank you all again for coming and listening, and if there's an intention here at all, the intention is just to help each of us increase our willingness to the point that we actually increase our practice, increase our vigilance at least a little more. If this increase in willingness and this increase in vigilance is always happening, even a little each day, it adds up to something very, very mighty. So what I will do now is I will play our closing song. This is a song that many of you are familiar with. It's by a young man named Jason Gray. And the name of the song is Remind Me Who I Am. We can sing this to Ramana. Or Jesus, because really they're the same. Or Buddha.
I belong to you.
While listening to this song, something came to me to share as a final thought on this teaching. And what came was that if the intellectual mind listens to the two questions, from where did this thought arise, which focuses on the silence, because that's where all thoughts come from, or to whom does this thought appear, which focuses on the awareness, the watcher of the thought, the mind may say, but those are two different things, the silence and the awareness. And what came was not to listen to that thought, not to listen to any thought of confusion, just to continue to inquire in with whichever question is most helpful to you. And when one deeply emerges into the silence or deeply emerges into the awareness, what one finds is that they are one. And that's when one knows who I am. Thank you for coming, everyone. Bye.